So I think we have Rich on stage now. Rich, can you hear me?
Yes, I'm on. Can you guys hear me okay?
Perfectly, perfectly. Awesome.
Very good.
Yeah. All right. Then let's kick things off. Welcome everybody who's joining live and to those who will be listening in later. This is the 20th and penultimate space of the first season in a weekly series called Adopting Bitcoin, a conversation with Galoy. We're here to hold discussions with thoughtful builders and Bitcoiners about Bitcoin and Lightning adoption, and about enabling communities and institutions to use Bitcoin as money, which is our mission at Galoy. So my name is Kemal, and I have Andrew here with me. Hi, Andrew.
Hello, hello.
And the current block height is 732,896. And the Moscow time is 23:85. So that's the amount of sats a dollar can buy you. And that clock is slowly but gradually going towards zero. Yeah, so today we will be talking about Motif and who they are and what they do and what is their contribution to more and more people using the Bitcoin Beach Wallet in Peru. So if you have the Bitcoin Beach Wallet on your phone, you can go to the map tab on the bottom and you'll see a map first of El Salvador with many pins. Those are merchants that accept Bitcoin in El Salvador. And if you pinch and zoom out of the map a little bit and look further down south on the American continent, you'll notice that there is another busy hub of pins in and around Lima, the capital of Peru. So I really want to know the story of how those pins there and got there. And that is what we're going to talk about today with our guest, Rich Swisher from the Motif NGO. Because according to what I read in a recent Bitcoin Magazine article, Motif seem to be the ones who have contributed to kicking things off in Peru. So pleasure to have you on, Rich. Welcome.
Great to be on. Thanks so much. We've been under wraps for so long. Well, it feels like for so long. So it's exciting to get out now into the press and be able to share with people the cool stuff going on.
Yeah, that's quite a lot that's going on, and I'm very curious to learn about it. But maybe let's first start off, like, who are you, and tell us a little bit about yourself, and then let's talk a little bit about Motif.
Okay. I'm a dad and husband and entrepreneur, and I've got a quite a diverse background as far as business goes. And the way Motif came about, I was down in Peru, building a playground. I was working with a guy who grew up in Romania, and then he went to Bible college in Argentina, and then he stayed, and he's been like a missionary pastor type down in South America ever since. Married a Peruvian lady and lives in Peru. And he and I were working on a playground for a Christian ministry called Kids Around the World that plants playgrounds to foster the development of healthy communities. And we were digging through rock to plant this thing in Valley. The Romanian guy that I'm working with, he noticed a problem in some children there, and he noticed there was one child kind of being completely ignored, like the other villagers couldn't see him there, and he kind of recognized that he's not to intervene with anyone. Little tiny village, so it really struck Valley as odd. He went to check it out, and what we ended up uncovering was they have a 5% mortality rate in their children there. Just due to exposure to cold through their feet. So the way Motif started was Valley seeing that problem, and neither one of us being the type of people that could turn away from a problem that had such dire results and was really easy to fix. You know, we set up something, we called it Life-Saving Steps, where we got like athletic hiking boots for the kids. two visits by a medical foot specialist for the year, seven pairs of socks. And after that first year, there was, in that village, there was no deaths related to that. So we felt really good. And then in 2020, we got into Bitcoin and started using Bitcoin for that. And that's really where things launched. It wasn't even going to be a company or anything. It was just a side project to help these kids and get more and more villages every year taken care of. And then really introducing Bitcoin changed the entire nature of it. And now it's this massive operation all over the place.
That's amazing. I mean, you were there on a vacation you didn't go there because of these kids, but you just came across these kids and their problem and diagnosed and felt like you and your friend needed to intervene because it was, I assume it was clear what the problem was immediately. And and then started to build that out to what then developed into Motive. Do I understand that correctly? Is that a fair summary? Like you started by helping people and then thought or saw more areas to help these people in. Is that the right way to think about it?
Yeah, that is. And really what helped us see the rest of it. I mean, we saw it was tricky to see the mortality issue, but we saw it and the fix on it was pretty simple. I mean, it was $3,000. That was easy for us to come up with and get done. And I was there working. I worked with kids around the world. So I wasn't on vacation, but I was there to put in a playground. That was it.
Okay.
We were working with some locals there. But once it changed and Bitcoin was added to the equation, Valley and I had to dive down the rabbit hole. And it really spoke to a lot of my past, just the cryptography, the security of it made a ton of sense. I think some people come to understand things more from a financial or investment side and other people come from technology side. And for me, it was cryptography. I used to work in real high level security stuff and did cryptography and of course never saw anything as cool as blockchain. But when we started adding Bitcoin down there, Bitcoin really started fixing things, you know? So one of the things that we were trying to do was create little circular economies. And I had not too long after we started started utilizing Bitcoin and then started doing this, we got put in touch with Mike Peterson at Bitcoin Beach. And so I guess I'll dive into that because we got started for probably about 6 months before I went down there. And it was, you know, it's hard to create a circular economy when all you're doing is buying shoes and socks and paying some medical people. It's not real circular. We did get the shoe manufacturer to accept Bitcoin. And, you know, so that's a little bit of adoption thing, but it doesn't turn it circularly.
You also need the places for the shoemaker to pay for the material that he needs in Bitcoin. So and so forth, right?
Exactly. And so what we were also dealing with, Valley was taking care of tons of people through his own ministry there, Sur Fugio. And he has thousands of people. And Peru was hit so much harder than any other country in the world with COVID. I mean, if you look up the mortality rates there, it's hard to understand why Peru is so much worse than anywhere else. But they really did just get annihilated. And he was getting out of the people that he cares for and in the areas where he's caring for people, he was getting 5 to 10 new widowers or widows a week. And around averaging like 5 new orphans per week. So, I mean, if you think of the way those numbers add up for one guy in a small little ministry to take care of. It was really rough. And people in those areas around Lima, you were talking about where all the businesses to go and accept people around there. It was so much worse than here. You know, we think about, wow, I might be too broke to go buy something from the store. Their stores were too broke to be open or have anything. The stores, suppliers that they were buy from were going out of business. They couldn't, super draconian lockdowns, super dangerous spread, super vulnerable to it. Like, it was the perfect storm that created real starvation issues, you know? So we looked at doing these basic nutritional baskets. So this will feed the family with real nourishment there for a week. And we went to some stores that, you know, had no choice but to be closed and couldn't do anything. And we said, okay, we're going to wake this little economy back up, but we're going to wake it up under Bitcoin, not under Soles. And so we invited these families out to, we called it a pay with Bitcoin event, Pago con Bitcoin. And we'd bring them out. They varied in size. Some of them were quite large, it'd be 100 people. Some of them are smaller. Socially distance everyone, bring the store out that's going to be selling these basic baskets, and train everyone how to download the wallet and then how to transact with the wallet. And we started out, we were using on-chain wallets, and it was a nightmare for quite a while until we got to the Bitcoin Beach wallet. So we train them up, and it would be a several day process to make sure there's no little technical issues or snafus. And then the final day of it was they would transact with the business. So the business and the customer learn how to transact together, and they'd get their basic baskets. And we were rolling along like, you know, gangbusters, helping people that way. That started us realizing, okay, we help them, we make one transaction, this doesn't go. Another realization that we're not doing a circular economy here, even just with the stores. So that's when we started working on, and that's around the time that I went to El Zante and I saw they were doing a bunch of educational things, which made a lot of sense to me. Mm-hmm. And that's when we started realizing, like, okay, we need to put a lot of effort toward going out, getting more businesses to accept it and pay a good portion of their salary to their employees in it. And we need to get the wholesalers or suppliers involved and accepting Bitcoin and paying employees. And then the final piece, and really we're still working on this one and we've got some of it, but is getting the producers, getting the farms themselves, the fishing boats themselves, the manufacturers themselves, the suppliers of raw materials doing the same. And once we have, the people at the receiving level are the easiest part, it's the businesses. And once we have those three layers of business, producer, supplier, retailer, paying in those, it helps everything. It helps put the pressure on, which we like, what we're trying to do is get businesses to pay their employees just enough to where it almost meets all their needs, but they really feel compelled to go to their local businesses and say, hey, I would really like you to accept Bitcoin. And so we were at that level in that stage and learned a lot of painful lessons during that time.
And how was the situation when you discovered these people and provided those shoes and basically saw that outside impulses can actually improve kick off like good developments in that community with very little effort, basically? How was the situation? Like, what kind of money were people using? How were they paying for stuff? How were they saving? What was the situation when you met?
Right. Very different in each different part of Peru. One thing that's kind of unique about Peru, which makes it a really good place for us to start, is that it is tricultural. Very, very, three very distinct different cultures, different languages. And people say, like, well, how is it operating with a Peruvian? Tell me where this Peruvian is and where they came from and that kind of thing. Because up in the Andes, the culture is Quechua. Mm-hmm. A lot of people view it as the original Inca. Some people don't, I don't know, but they speak a different language. They don't speak Spanish for the most part. Mm-hmm. Up in the Amazon, it's like Amazonian native tribes, very different. And then in the rest of the Peru, it's, more Spanish mixed, America's culture sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And so up in the Andes, they are looking and scraping and scrapping for opportunity. Their kind of life situation and financial situation is the most interesting, in that they're geographically separated and isolated from the broader economy. It's really a geography thing. So they're so far out on such bad roads that they cannot rely on, larger, city areas, municipal areas, or anything like that. They can't, they're so far out and they're separated by language and all, like they have a ton of agriculture land, but they can't get anything to market and they can't make good deals that are honored and whatnot. They have no recourse if somebody, messes them over on a deal. And they have access to education all the way up through high school. The only thing that was preventing people, that was causing people to drop out, was lack of footwear, proper footwear, because you're walking 10 miles to school and whatnot. But a real different work ethic there as well, and a belief that they can do anything. You give them a challenge and they would be all over diving to tackle it. And then, so for them, Bitcoin, like one of the coolest successes we had out of there, they're very non-trusting. It's really hard to earn their trust. And so we use life-saving steps in areas like that as kind of a, hey, we're here to just help you. If you want nothing more than to receive this help and keep your kids safe, cool. But get to know us. And when they do, then they're open to listening to more. And we had gotten there with this one village, and the guy that we have that runs the Andes region for us, he's Quechua himself. And there was this group of women, and he was like, his wife is Quechua and she knows how to do their ancestral crafts. He said, we could set up classes for you guys to learn your ancestral craft that's been lost because of, basically sustenance living. We can do that. And then we can help get those into Cusco and try to develop a market for you, maybe get some of them to Lima. And the women spoke among themselves, these 20 women, and they came back to him and they said, okay, we'll go along with this. But, if this is a trick, if there's anything shady, if anything you say isn't true, we're going to kill you. And, they said, as long as you're okay with that, then we'll go forward. And he carefully said, yeah, guy, okay. And so these women, they started learning their crafts and they launched so far, so fast that we weren't used to it. They even were set up their own pop-up Bitcoin markets up in the Andes. I don't know how financially successful they've been, but they've done it several times. And now they are going to other villages and teaching women how to do these crafts. Not us asking them to. We didn't even know they were doing it, which is the most exciting thing. It's gathering its own steam and rolling off on its own. That's what we wanted. Whereas in the areas around Lima, what we run into a lot more, the biggest challenge is convincing these people that they can self-determine. They can actually earn a living. They're smart enough. And it sounds silly for it to be such a challenge to convince them of that, but they have generations of economic failure, of no career success or anything like that. And for whatever reason, they have developed a very strong belief that they are people that are here that need to be taken care of. I don't want it to sound like it's like a racial or cultural thing, but they really believe like they weren't born like the rest of us that can actually do things on their own. So it is a challenge beyond Bitcoin, It's a challenge that Bitcoin really kind of presents, though, because you should be a little bit sharper and more knowledgeable if you're using a tool that's as valuable and multifaceted as Bitcoin rather than a fiat currency. And there is a little more education and responsibility to oneself and security. But like you were asking about savings, savings is not a concept that would make any sense to them. Mm. And when it is brought up, it's looked at like, that's a stupid idea. Why on earth would you do that? They come from a survival mentality. And in a survival mentality, you don't hold on to things you don't need right now. And when you have stuff that you can use, use it right now before somebody else gets it. Mm-hmm. And that's the way money goes. We run into a lot with our, so we do a ton of vocational and entrepreneurial programs for these people. And one of the things we run into in the vocational that Bitcoin is a help to it, but the guys will go to work and they'll get their paycheck and they will take their entire paycheck to the bar that night, drink the whole thing and go home with kids that can't, kids don't have anything to eat or whatnot. And the wife is quite upset. And then the guy has to quit the employer to go get another job because of, you know, he's not able to fulfill his responsibilities to the employer because some of what he spent, he was supposed to be turning back into his work. And it gets really, really hairy. So what we've set up in several cases is there's a portion that goes to the worker, but the rest heads home to the family so it can be doled out. So I don't know how I feel about that whole thing as a husband, but I guess if I was blowing my whole paycheck at the bar the night I earned it, then it'd be a good piece, be a good thing to do.
Yeah, those sound like pretty big cultural challenges and seems very strange to me personally as well, not to have that concept of saving and thinking basically day to day and fighting for survival and spending whatever you get and for hedonistic things like spending it all in a bar in one night. How did you, like, despite all of these cultural challenges, it seems like Bitcoin does have a positive effect and is being adopted and used. So how did it come about, or when did the vision actually hit you that Bitcoin could help these communities? Was that after basically the success of Bitcoin Beach made the rounds, or was it even before? Can you speak a little about that and how it influenced you personally and Motive and your mission, what you saw? You mentioned you went to El Salvador later, how that influenced you.
Yeah, that's really, so kind of to do a timeline, I think we first went at it with Bitcoin in August or September of 2020. Mm-hmm. And we're doing it with like on-chain wallets and just stumbling our way through. And then around the new year, right around when it was becoming 2021, I got introduced to Mike Peterson and was told, you should talk to this guy. He's got great stuff going on. So a close friend of mine and he and I have worked on big projects together in sports and entertainment world. He's the guy that connected Mike and the whole Bitcoin Beach thing together with donation. And so I had been made aware of that, and I was rolling along. And then I was told, go meet up with or talk to Mike. So I got on the phone with Mike, great dude, of course. And he said, yeah, come on down, stay at my house for a week. Let me show you what we have going on here. And so I did that. And that was incredible. And I felt like the whole week I'm down there, I felt like such a useless dude on a trip that I shouldn't even be on, because I couldn't wrap my head around or figure anything out. I'm sitting around in paradise with great people and was clueless. And I came home and I was still pretty clueless. And over like the next 2 weeks, within 2 or 3 weeks, it really started hitting me. A couple of things that I saw Mike doing were really important. One was he was engaging municipal projects. So I was throwing that around in my head on how that might work. He was doing education, and that was the biggest epiphany for me. Is like, here's what it needs to be about for many reasons, not only on the Bitcoin side, but on humanitarian help these people side. We are educating them on basic nutrition, protecting one's feet from the cold, you know, like really basic stuff, up to they need vocational training. So that was a big epiphany. Those two things really hit. And then I saw Mike continuing to work, and that was February of 2021. He was continuing to work on getting more businesses to accept Bitcoin. And I got to see some of the little pushback or whatever. And those things really helped. And over that next 2 to 3 weeks after I got back, Valley and I talking and going over things, we kind of developed our 5E ethos that we use to describe how we go about doing things. So we educate, and then we equip, and then we empower people. And the education is always going to have Bitcoin involved in it, but then there might also be like vocational education, nutritional education, whatever. So get them educated so they're understanding what you're helping them do. And then equip them. So that's usually the simple thing. They might need a phone. They might need a laptop. They might need just here. Here's a wallet. Yeah, they might need shoes. So get them equipped. And then the empower them part should be kind of the, okay, and now they're empowered. But it actually, for us, especially down in Lima, we have to work really hard to get them empowered, because that's a decision that one has to make for themselves that, you know what, fine. I will step out and do this kind of thing. And it's a tough decision to make in a lot of situations. So when we get them there and they go out and start hitting it, we're still there for them. So it's not like, oh, you did our class, get out of here. We want to mentor and foster not only to help the individual further, but in creating that circular economy, all these pieces, we're still connecting pieces, right? So, we get out and do that. And that, we say, emancipates them from whatever held them back. For some people, nutrition and illness can be that. Others, many others, it's lack of gainful employment, whatever it might be. A financial system that locks you out. A financial system that says you don't have an identity. You can't get an identity, so you can't bank here. And even if you did, it would be so expensive that you shouldn't bank here. And take those chains away so that everyone can bank, so that everyone has the same level playing field. You know, a lot of people say, oh, you're eradicating poverty. No, I don't have any problem with poverty unless I'm the one in it. And then I want to work to get myself out. But I'm not one of those people really driven to be real wealthy, and I have been poor, and that wasn't the issue. Poverty was the result. The issue was something else. So we want to fix those. We want to help people fix the issues. So if they do want to change their economic situation, they can. And the last E is to elevate. And that one too, I got a ton of pushback from our Latin American staff. Elevate is not us elevating anybody. It's not Bitcoin elevating anybody. It's people that emancipated themselves, turning around and helping do that for more others, for other people. Mm-hmm. And they had said, like, listen, in Latin America, that's not it. If you get ahead, you just stay ahead. And if you can push the others down, that makes you even further ahead. And I was like, well, that is a recipe for disaster. You really, a rising tide lifts all boats. We're going to be a rising tide. And I've been really excited to see our own Latin American staff saying, like, it's working. People are doing that. So that's something that we will continue. I think wherever we can find perpetual motion for growth in Bitcoin and really pressing the hyper-Bitcoinization, that's where we want to go. But we're still sampling and trying. Like, we had a big issue last summer. We realized we're downloading wallets like you would not believe. We're doing these pay with Bitcoin events. It's going great. We're getting all this nutrition. We're not tracking the individuals. My concern was it'd be the same individual, like coming in the same week, coming 3 times for 3 weeks worth of food sort of deal. The issue that we had wasn't that. The problem was people were staying in one place for like 3 days, maybe a week, maybe because they had worked for that 1 week or those 3 days. And they would get up and take off and go 2 hours away because there was another place to work for 3 hours. So we were doing a one-time help, which is exactly what we didn't want to do. And we had to learn our way through that and go like, okay, here's how we create our cross sections. And now we're still really learning on the cultural side of it. The Bitcoin side is the easy side. The cultural side, we're still learning tons and need to learn a lot more.
Yeah, that's probably a lot to talk about, the cultural side and all the things that need to be done. But let's focus a little bit on the Bitcoin side of things. You said it's less of a problem. So in the grand scheme of things, with all the other challenges that are there. So how did you go about it? So you said like it was like around half a year before the El Salvador announcement when Bitcoin Beach really like made waves and became renowned, that you met and talked with Mike Peterson and inspired from him and adapted some things for the communities in Peru, especially about education. We talked about the 5 E's that you have. That's educate, equip, probably in terms of Bitcoin, that's then mobile phones, I guess, empower, elevate, and emancipate. And so how do you really equip what these people need to interact with Bitcoin, or what they use in Peru to use Bitcoin?
We really like Bitcoin Beach Wallet. We don't mandate it, but it's, you know, we love the functionality of it. The map feature is great. We'd love to see it be to have a Soles conversion. It's just easier for some of our people that we help if they can just see the number, not have to do the math. But it works great, and really the Lightning Network is what makes it doable for this situation. And then for the businesses, like Peru is the number one place in the world for counterfeit money as well, by the way. So they're very clued in on things, and they right away like, oh, Bitcoin, that's hacker money. That's dark web. And we have to, you know, explain out to them that, nope, no, it's actually, if you're going to do crime, it's way better to use US dollars than anything else. This is not that. And that wasn't too big of a challenge. And then the wallet's use has been great. The stores like it. We are having a lot of armed robberies around. We have 15 different hubs, like community centers we operate on various areas of Peru. And we're having armed robberies, and we get the police involved. And that kind of led to mayors of these municipalities. Like Lima has about 11 million people in it, and it has 42 municipalities within it. And so the mayors of these, of where our hubs were, they found out what we were doing, and we were a little concerned at first, and they've been incredibly supportive, really helpful. And now the municipalities have even one, La Molina, which is a nice area of Lima. They are launching a Bitcoin adoption affinity program. They're calling it Molly Coin. It's basically La Molina is for Bitcoin. And they are reaching out to the businesses for us. They have us doing their consulting on how to adopt Bitcoin. They are just doing a conference, I think in the next several days, some kind of a closed municipal conference that they have us speaking at it. So you guys are at it too. Salim is speaking there. And Salim at Bitcoin Beach and at Galloway works super close with Valley. He saves us quite frequently. Awesome. But now we're having other municipalities around there get a hold of us. La Molina is kind of it's a really nice area, and I think a lot of the other municipalities look to it. We're working in We're working in about 8 or 9 of those municipalities right now, and we're getting interest from a lot more than just those mayors in saying, okay, how do we do it? Which allows us to guide the conversation in truth. Because most of the questions we get hit up about down there are from wealthy Peruvians looking for what altcoin they can dive into to make a bunch of money. And, you know, we let them know that that's not our, it's not our space. Best of luck to them. We just stick to the way Bitcoin is really helping a country that is going through a lot of struggles. Through this time, a communist party won the presidential election. That brought a lot of fears and concerns and different problems. The inflation is a big problem. The lockdowns are a big problem. And something that has been stabilizing for them has been Bitcoin. So it's performed really well on its own. And we've only had to help guide people into it, be available for answers, and then look for new places and new ways to pop Bitcoin into things.
Yeah, fantastic. I mean, you mentioned there were mayors reaching out to you. So does that mean that authorities are generally looking warmly to the efforts of Motif and all the Bitcoin things and the Bitcoin economy that you're doing?
As I am knocking on wood right now, yeah, so far. I'm always looking for, okay, well, there's another side. There's another way to view it by a government. So, you know, I try to be ready for the negatives, but they've really, I don't know. I think part of it is the way that government is structured. You know, it might look similar on paper or on a org chart, the way their democracy is set up as opposed to ours, but there, things are really driven heavily by these mayors. So at a mayoral level, you haven't really, if you're a politician, you're at the mayoral level, you probably have bigger aspirations. So what it seems to be that the mayors do with their time in office there, number one would be go corrupt and, you know, send a bunch of money to your buddies. That's one big thing they do. The other thing they will do is try to get to higher office. And the way they get to that is by making things go well in their city, running popular programs. And so that's what we are looking at. And everything that we have done with La Molina anyway, yeah, they just want it. They see the truth and that, yeah, this is a better way to go. But La Molina is upper middle class and upper middle class from all the parts I've been around too. So I'm curious to see an area like Comas or Callao that we're working in that are dangerous areas like Comas. The mayor and all them really like us. They're still evaluating whether they're interested in what La Molina is doing, maybe doing the same thing, but they haven't signed off on it yet. But they are having a lot of their municipal employees go through our training and to understand it. And they're understanding it in a positive way. It's not like, all right, go figure out what they're up to and it's negative. A, we don't have anything to hide. And B, everything they've done, like they have a police commando, like this undercover police commando unit. It's like an anti-theft, anti-street crime unit. They sent them all to us to go through all their program. And so we just start building good relationships there. And those relationships have various branches that go through the city. And we're leaving behind positive influence. You know, everything, there's really nothing assaultable that we do. We're straight up helping save women and children's lives for the most part and creating great opportunity. We're everybody's friend right now. And we're just hoping to keep it that way, you know, keep serving them. And hopefully they recognize, like, look, they're just here to do better. They want to see us do better.
Yeah. Knock on wood. I'm asking obviously because oftentimes when someone or people start to adopt something else, then the government money then maybe government officials might see a threat in that, to their monetary sovereignty of the government, maybe, you know. I've been reading that recently there's been like the highest inflation in decades in Peru going on right now. Can you speak a little to that? How does that affect like the community, or is it maybe even at a point where the people, the communities that are using Bitcoin are basically, yeah, not suffering from inflation because they are using Bitcoin? Or can you speak a little to that situation?
Yeah, I think most things are still denominated in soles. When you go to one of these stores, it's not like, you know, the candy bar says 0.00053 satoshis. It still has a number of soles there. Soles may drop while the dollar rises, you know, so we might have a loss here as we're looking at our value of Bitcoin, and they might have a gain or whatever. But none of those things have really been a big issue at the level that we are operating at. Even where I thought that would be felt most and soonest would be in a business that is really doing a high volume of their transactions in Bitcoin, and there's a big dip and it hits. And we've always taught to have reserves for that so that you're okay with a several month dip. And I've not had any. I don't do the day-to-day field operations though, so really the meat of that would be better to be asked of somebody that's down there, because I don't get all that information. But we haven't. I would get the information if we ran into a problem. And I'm very keen. All of us are really keenly watching how these businesses can operate. But I think most of them still operate with so much solace that they feel the same things that the other businesses in their categories feel. But it's a good question. I'll ask, like, hey, is this portion that stays Bitcoin, is there a benefit or a negative or whatever?
So maybe there is no effect at all because there is no savings culture, but who knows? I'd be interested. I just read that headline that, I mean, we're seeing it around different countries around the world, and just stumbled upon Peru after having seen all of those pins pop up on the Bitcoin Beach Wallet map in South America. So that caught my attention. I would like to open up the stage now for some of our listeners who would be keen to get on stage and either comment or ask questions directly to Rich. So feel free to just request the microphone and we'll get you up on stage. So I would like to know from you, Rich, when I have you here, like, what's your view on community banking? You already said that many are using the Bitcoin Beach wallet. Obviously, they are then basically part of the community bank of the community in El Zonte. How do you think about that model? And are there actually other wallets in use in the community, other Lightning wallets that are being used? Can you speak a little to that maybe as well?
I know Exodus is one that they use. I'm not sure what other ones. And a lot of our spread, we don't do the pay with Bitcoin events where we bring them in there, we sit them down and have them download wallets anymore. We haven't done that since the last summer. So we advise people and let them pick and select. So I don't know what the cross section is. That'd be a good one for us to dive into with Nicholas or something. We haven't taken a look at our back end in a long time as far as the Bitcoin Beach stuff goes. So I don't know what all they would be. I know Exodus is one I hear of a lot. One of the personal wallets that I use just got purchased by somebody else, and I'm switching. And I got that advice from Prue. It was like, hey, a bunch of us are using Exodus and we liked it. That's about all I know on that one.
All right. So You mentioned that you're equipping communities as well with the necessary material. I saw on your website, I think that's Motiv, MOTIV.NGO, that you're also looking for mobile phones. Is that right?
No, we do. Having a mobile phone has never been a problem, even when they're stolen. They're peruse quick at it. Like, you got a new phone real quick, easy. The old one shut off quick and easy. Salim jumps on helping us out, getting the wallet shut off. Like, that system works smooth and well. Equipping them, it really would be more showing them the wallet. Here's how you download this. This is how you go. And then a lot of what we do is we spin up a lot of small businesses. So equipping them might be helping them buy their vegetable cart that they're going to use to launch their business. Could be some seed money if somebody's starting a bakery, like out of your home bakery has been a successful business for women to start up. And they may need help getting. So the equip part of it would be things like that as well. As far as getting the phone, and even like reception up in the Andes, none of those have been roadblocks for us that we anticipated might be. We are really looking for computers. Haven't reached out to like a Microsoft or a Google yet, and that's on the list to do here soon. But if anyone has any connections to getting us dialed in with a solid company to where we can get like certified, here you go. Now you are Microsoft Office certified, so you can go and get a job where they're looking for that certification. Something like that, that would be great.
All right. Andrew, you had a question. You raised your hand. Is that still,
have a question? I want to pass it along. We had Jamie speak, hop up, and so I can, you know, add in later, but go ahead.
Hey, no, I think he sort of addressed my question just now. Just was wondering, you know, some of the challenges around cell phone usage and penetration among, you know, the targeted population and just internet infrastructure. So that was one thing. The other thing is, like, this is, you know, years ago, you know, I began my university career thinking that I would be an anthropologist, and I took like a lot of classes on Peru and just, you know, the diversity of like that, you know, we may not realize that Peru has culturally, you know, from, you know, native Aymara and Quechua speakers from the Amazon all the way to the Andes and even different dialects of Quechua. Just thinking about, and you, I know you addressed this as a challenge for sure, but also like just thinking about like, you know, how are people understanding like, you know, this merge of like technology, very technical, most often English language, and how it translates into you know, the local indigenous languages.
So one of the, I'll just say right now, I never mind pointing out our weaknesses. I want to point out that as a company, we're not even officially a year old yet. And really, truthfully, we're like a year and a half old. And an area that I feel personally we need to grow in is that technical education. I know it helped me a ton. I went and jumped into a great program at MIT to help really, you know, understand things better. But functionally, they don't need to know any of that to use Bitcoin. It's just that we really want them to. If it is the transaction they're transacting with their phone, that's a procedure that you can teach, and they don't need to know how wonderful Bitcoin is. But I really do want them to understand there are such valuable attributes to Bitcoin as a currency, as the actual utilitarian money, and to the financial system, that the very simplified financial system that cannot be taken away from them, that it creates. But then also the way that decentralized and democratized identities or anything else have fantastic security on the Bitcoin blockchain. Now, I don't think we teach it well enough, and we are working on a curriculum. And that's something that Mike Peterson and I have talked about several times. So hopefully we'll have a better curriculum to do that deeper. But at the moment, you know, to teach them the very basics, the basic attributes that it has, really allows you to build that economy with them having enough of an understanding to say, okay, this is good. And you don't have to get real technical at all. That's what we've found anyway. I'm super non-technical, and man, I get it. I get it more from sovereignty, personal sovereignty, self-directed side of things, as well as the cryptography. And I think for a lot of people, it's figuring out, okay, which angle is your best direct access to understanding, and then making sure that we get them the information that they understand.
I think it's great that you want to educate about Bitcoin. I agree that it's not strictly necessary, similar to like how we're using mobile phones or the internet or even email day in and day out. And yeah, I personally don't know how to set up an email server. Well, maybe I could do it with some instructions, but like really getting how it works is probably not something I could explain to someone else. But it's, yeah, the goal is to just give access to digital money. I think in El Salvador, it was like a situation where many people were unbanked, and access to digital payments and in a convenient way, even for those maybe that are not super technical or even literate, where they can send value with their phones to others and receive, is even already a big improvement in their standard of living. So
just a quick offer, you know, if you I know John from My First Bitcoin, it's an NGO here,
Hello, Jaime, is it just me or did he cut off?
Yeah, it's pretty choppy. I didn't hear much after My First Bitcoin.
I think
it might have been an offer to make a connection. I'll ask my question while we try and get him back. Which is, I was just curious about any of the resources or tools you used to educate people. Were there, you know, did you print things? Did you have, you know, presentations? Did you just do one-on-one, like, oh, you know, here's a phone, here's how to use it, like what, like that? And just curious, like what worked or what you learned as you were teaching people to get wallets and send and receive their first Bitcoin?
What we learned, and really, you know, a lot of it can be our own preconceived notion. As early as this is, there's still more lessons to learn on how best to teach. I'm a believer that, you know, we all have different learning styles, and we need to have materials that hit each one, an audible learner, a visual learner, an interactive learner, a tactile learner. But everything we have done has been show. We show them how. We're not helping the middle class out, not reaching out to the middle class or the upper class or anything. The people that we're reaching are, you know, in desperate throes pretty much. And typically there's not a high level of education there. So really showing them is what it's about. And yeah, when you show something that operates as simple, and really I'm not blowing smoke up Galloid's wallet on how much I like it, but it really does have the best functionality on maybe the 10 or 15 wallets that I've tried. There's not a lot of teaching that needs to happen on that wallet. It's just really, it's really effective. And it kind of goes back to what we were just talking about. Like, can anyone describe to me the technical side of how my bank gets money to another bank? I did work in banking technology just a bit, and man, talk about simplification. We've taken an incredibly ridiculous process and reduced it down to something so simple. Well, none of us understood that super complex problem or, you know, process before. So that kind of follow suit that, well, we don't really need to understand how it's done now. But I think that having a basic understanding of here's what we did to eliminate that formerly required third party. Here's how we got rid of that. And here's what we replaced those verification systems with. This is why this system is called trustless, because it has all the trust. It's completely trustworthy. And explaining them on just enough to get to that level is what we're looking for. How much knowledge do they have to really be able to retain to understand that, okay, if somebody asks me a question I haven't been specifically given an answer to before about the verifiability of transactions on the blockchain, will they be able to answer it? And that's, we're going to learn that as we roll these curriculums out. But I think it's really, I agree. I think it's really important because it's kind of like whatever you believe in. If you believe in something just because somebody said to, you're going to be able to have your mind change real easy, or you're going to be able to be deceived real easy. If you've dug through something and you really know it to be a fact and you've verified it, it's a whole lot harder to change your mind or to deceive you or drag you off onto some other, you know, shit coin. So, and I think that's going to happen a lot in the third world. Bitcoin can do a ton for the third world because its properties, and because, like, for us, we don't want somebody to be able to yank the rug out from under these people. They can't, they're at the bottom now. That'd be a deadly swipe for them. So we're not going to bring them something that's going to have the rug pulled out from under them. That's why Bitcoin's so great. But they would be super susceptible if you didn't explain what Bitcoin's properties and attributes really were. You get somebody going on it, and all of a sudden they go like, hey, we're great on cryptocurrencies because we're great on Bitcoin. We've failed them because they will be able to have everything taken away from them in a scam. So that's the reason I want to make sure that these people understand now it's Bitcoin is separate and different from all of them. And here's why.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. Love your efforts. Yeah, maybe we're not at the top of the hour. Maybe tell our listeners how can they reach out to you, or how can the Bitcoin community actually support your efforts in Peru?
One of the keys to that, like right now, we're really getting our social media presence out. We've really focused on just hitting the need on the ground in Peru. I believe that we will be branching out into other countries. We've started to work with an energy developer that's doing different waste to energy projects that involve blockchain and Bitcoin and IoT in their operation, in the actual functioning. Like picture a waste to energy landfill, and all of the trucks have weight and geo-tracking sensors, so they know when the garbage is being picked up and when and where it's being dropped off. And within those transactions existing on the blockchain for companies to verify the right tonnage is going in, the right type of fuel is going in, the right amount of energy is coming out to hit our ROI. And they're very pro Bitcoin, and are looking ways that will be also integrated into the pay system. So I'm really looking forward to tackling, helping out with that, consulting on that. And then Motive's role is to help on the ground where that waste to energy landfill comes in and might disrupt a sub economy of recyclers and garbage picking recyclers. We want to come in with vocational training, get them trained up so they can work in the landfill or other things. And then the way that the listeners here can help Motive, of course, donation is always great. And if you go to our website, MOTIV at NGO or PIV.NGO. There's a donate button there where you can donate to us. We are a tax exempt 501c3 now. Just got that letter to make it official here recently. But you can also help by blowing us up on all social media platforms. Help us with the awareness campaign. Right now, we're dumping a ton of energy into, hey, let's get this awareness out because we want growth. So anywhere you can follow us, like us, share, retweet, whatever it might be, that'd be a big help. And then if it's anything like, hey, I'm good at writing curriculum or something like that, shoot me or us an email. And it's just, for me, it's rs@motive.ngo. Or you can just type in info@motive.ngo. Send any kind of information there. And we would love to, we'd love to talk to people with new ideas. Or anything they think that, that we might need.
Yeah, fantastic. Thanks a lot, Rich, for this update from what's going on in Peru and what Motif is doing, and yeah, for bringing circular economies to more communities. And yeah, so this was the penultimate episode of our first season, and next week, we will wrap things up with the 21st episode and the last episode of the first season with a very special community, very good friends of mine from Germany. They're called 21. They started a online education-focused Bitcoin community in German language and in 2019, and have grown to a real massive decentralized online community with dozens of meetups emerging all over Germany, Austria, and Switzerland, with a huge podcast and a YouTube channel with amazing videos about Bitcoin and how to use it, how to run your node and stuff in German language. I think getting a lot of the fantastic material that's in the Bitcoin ecosystem out there already, but unfortunately only in English language, into local languages, is one thing that is dearly needed. And communities, strength in numbers can just really accelerate those things. So tune in next week when we have 21 on board. And yeah, if you're looking to create your own online community with meetups and podcasts and everything that belongs to it, make sure you tune in. Thanks, everyone, and have a good day.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, all.